Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Here we are in the middle of the almost nationwide shutdown over the coronavirus crisis. Panic on Wall Street over this has wiped out over 3 years of gains that reflected the best national economy in decades, if not ever. Commerce and industry have ground to a virtual halt in many cases and slowed to a crawl in others, though some businesses are humming in response to the crisis. And scores of millions of people all over the country are largely staying home in an effort to slow the rate of infection of the highly infectious COVID-19, as it is also called. When will all this end, and how bad off will we be as a result? We're going to discuss that. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you understand the progressive-dominated mainstream media and their counterparts in and outside the government and other social societal institutions, then you understand why they have seized on the crisis with an endless torrent of sensational negative publicity to promote collectivist ideas and methods to deal with it, and in the process, they hope, to transform our civilization. As of today, the World Health Organization reports there were a total of 1,133,758 cases of coronavirus worldwide and 62,784 deaths. I understand those figures are changing by the hour. I saw on some news programs today they were in the 8,000s of deaths in this country. We'll get to that in a minute, but this is what the World Health Organization shows about the virus as of today with their update as of today, April 5th. Here in the U.S., the governmental Centers for Disease Control reports that as of today, there were 304,826 confirmed cases and 7,616 deaths. As I said, I've seen over 8,000 deaths being recorded, and part of this, too, is probably the natural tendency to be sensational in the media, but there were – in the mainstream media, they were saying that the single largest number of deaths had occurred overnight with over 1,000 people dying and so on and so on. Remember that this is a situation which is growing. We will see as the White House updates on the coronavirus situation yesterday and today have made it clear we are – still on the rise, but there is some hope that we are going to see a peak in the number of cases and hopefully deaths in the coming days and hopefully not more than a week or two. That's what's being predicted anyway. Now, I'm not contending that the coronavirus situation isn't a real crisis or that the current situation isn't serious. There's no doubt about that. I am contending that it's being exploited at every opportunity to promote the socialist, globalist agenda to establish world government and subjugate America to their will. As numerous commentators have pointed out, pandemic or no pandemic, at some point we're going to have to end the stay-at-home orders and let our economy resume, or we're all going to go down with it. Of course, we will see continuing restrictions and recommendations to help avoid the spread of this disease, but we must be able to return to the great prosperity of recent years and soon if we are going to survive as a nation, as the nation we have been. Saying this, I realize there are others out there who actually would want the nation to die off as we have known it and be replaced with their vision of a socialist, globalist utopia that is for them, not for you or me. With this in mind, I'm not surprised that Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives are forming a select committee to investigate President Donald Trump, yes, yet again, their hated enemy, for his response to the COVID-19 situation, and no doubt to do all they can to politically destroy Trump in the process, despite Trump having done more to combat the spread of the coronavirus than any of them did. Let's listen to a segment of the New American Magazine's Behind the Deep State video series with host Alec Newman from March 30, called Fighting Coronavirus with Tyranny and Globalism. The promotional text for this episode states that host Newman explores the deep state effort to supposedly fight the coronavirus with more tyranny and globalism. In particular, Alex goes through a Rockefeller Foundation report that imagines a hypothetical pandemic dubbed lockstep. This scenario praises communist China's ruthless measures while attacking the United States. Newman also exposes the push for a new world order, mandatory vaccines, a global special drawing rights currency by the International Monetary Fund, and other schemes funded by the Bill Gates Foundation. Basically, the deep state is using the hysteria to wage war on liberty, nations, and privacy, the text says. Please play soundbite one.
Fighting coronavirus with tyranny. Why does it seem like the solution to every real and imagined problem, at least from the deep state's perspective, is always tyranny? Well, they are talking about rolling it out quick amid this coronavirus panic. You won't want to miss this one. One of the things that's most striking about the hysteria surrounding this coronavirus is how the mass murdering communist Chinese dictatorship, a brutal regime that harvests organs from political prisoners, that forces women to abort their children, that censors the internet, that claims virtually every kind of power that you could possibly imagine, and then some that you can't, they're being painted as the good guys amid this hysteria. It really is crazy. You know, you see the media talking about how great China did and they flattened the curve with all their tyranny. Wasn't that wonderful? Well, we should not be surprised by this. In fact, the globalist Rockefeller Foundation, and if you've been watching this series, you know the Rockefellers have been like this with the deep state. In fact, they are integral parts of the deep state. They actually put out a report 10 years ago in 2010 where they celebrated the hypothetical response of communist China to a hypothetical future pandemic. So you go to this report. It's a 2010 report by the Rockefeller Foundation. It's called Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development, developed by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Global Business Network. You go down to page 18. They have this hypothetical scenario. They call it lockstep. And I want to read you some quotes from this thing, because this is truly incredible. So they say that, hey, in 2012, remember this was written in 2010. In 2012, a pandemic that the world had been anticipating finally hit. And, you know, it caused all these problems, infected nearly 20% of the global population, killed some millions of people, majority of them young adults. They said also it brought commerce to a screeching halt, debilitated industries like tourism, broke global supply chains. But check this out. They say that even in developed countries, containment was a challenge. The United States' initial policy of strongly discouraging citizens from flying proved deadly in its leniency, accelerating the spread of the virus not just within the U.S. but across borders. Now, here's where the kicker comes in. They say, however, a few countries did fare better. China in particular. Can you just see David Rockefeller, you know, in hell saying these things, right? The Chinese, he says, the Chinese government's quick imposition and enforcement of mandatory quarantine for all citizens, as well as instant and near hermetic sealing off of the borders, saved millions of lives, stopping the spread of the virus far earlier than in other countries and enabling a swifter post-pandemic recovery. Isn't it amazing how tyranny works so wonderfully in China? They say China's government wasn't the only one that took extreme measures. National leaders all over the world flexed their authority, imposed airtight rules and restrictions, mandatory wearing of face masks, body temperature tests, authoritarian control and oversight of citizens was maintained even after the pandemic faded. It says leaders around the world took a firmer grip on power. Now, if you know the Rockefellers, you know that they've had this view, at least many of them, the leading ones, have had this view for a very long time. David Rockefeller very famously wrote in the New York Times in 1973 after a trip to China that the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao was one of the most important and successful in human history. You can still find that on the New York Times website today. Yeah, 80 million people were slaughtered and died of starvation as part of this social experiment. But hey, it was awesome, right? They had unity of purpose and ideology, says Mr. Rockefeller. This is the same guy, by the way, who wrote in his autobiography that he's part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of his own country with the goal of, and he actually said he's conspiring with the goal of creating a one world political and economic order. So recognize these people are very influential. They are very globalist. And if you keep reading on in this Rockefeller report on this lockstep exercise, they talk about some of the things that this government control started moving in towards. So they say we have a top-down direction and oversight. National leaders had more latitude to impose order in the ways they saw fit. This included biometric IDs for all citizens. Keep that in mind. We'll come back to it. Tighter regulation of key industries whose stability was deemed vital to national interest. They also said enforced cooperation with a new suite of new regulations and agreements that were slowly and steadily restoring order and, importantly, economic growth. Okay, you get this? They were planning all the way back in 2010 to fight tyranny, or to fight a pandemic with tyranny. And actually, we kind of saw this a little bit during Ebola, too, right? Obama put the guy in charge of the Ebola response. This was a guy who believed there was too many Africans on the planet. Not the best person to put in charge of a disease that's ravaging Africa, in my humble opinion, but very typical of globalists. And many people in the Obama administration had these same views, right? Like John Holdren, the co-author of Ecoscience, where they proposed a planetary regime that would have massive police powers to control all resources. They talked about putting sterilizing agents in the water supply. They said forced abortions could be sustained under our existing U.S. Constitution. Now, of course, all of this is ludicrous, right? This is all crazy. You don't fight diseases with tyranny. In fact, tyranny is probably the worst possible thing you could do to fight a disease. But unsurprisingly, globalists, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When you're a deep state totalitarian globalist, everything looks like a problem to be solved with tyranny. Now, obviously, these are not the only ones who've been planning for this, right? The Rockefeller Foundation, which very, very frequently works with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, another globalist foundation that's very pro-globalism, pro-United Nations, pro-vaccines for everybody. They have been in on this as well. Actually, last year, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funded this weird exercise at Johns Hopkins University where they talked about a pandemic. And amazing the kind of tyrannical proposals that came out there. I want you guys to watch this clip real quick where they're talking about actually censoring the media and censoring social media to prevent misinformation from going on. This is just a sample of the kind of tyranny that these people are promoting. So check this out.
How much control of information should there be? And by whom? And how can false information be effectively challenged? And what if that false information is coming from companies or from governments?
I think it's very important that we make sure that there is concise communication with all healthcare facilities where these patients are being treated so that there isn't mass panic.
We're at a moment where the social media platforms have to step forward and recognize the moment to assert that they're a technology platform and not a broadcaster is over. They, in fact, have to be a participant in broadcasting accurate information and partnering with the scientific and health communities to counterweight, if not flood the zone, of accurate information, because to put the genie back in the bottle of the misinformation and disinformation is nigh impossible.
One thing we haven't spoken about, and I'm wondering whether it's time to talk about this, is a step up from the part of the governments on enforcement actions against fake news.
There actually was a MIT press release that came out right around the time that coronavirus was discovered. Now, this was work funded by, surprise, your boy Bill Gates again, right, and a whole bunch of other globalist billionaires. And they talked about this new system to keep track of everybody's vaccination status that would involve putting like a kind of a tattoo under your skin with these nano molecules that would be able to be read by a smartphone. And don't believe me, you can check out the press release yourself. Seems like they've taken it down from the web, but we've got it archived. Unbelievable, the stuff that they're talking about. They also have this idea called the ID 2020. This is one funded by, again, the Rockefellers and, again, Bill and Melinda Gates. They want a digital ID for everybody on Earth. And they want this digital ID to keep track of all sorts of sensitive and private information like your vaccination and health history. Naturally, they're using this scheme to promote globalism. You just had the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Brown. He just came out and said that we should have a temporary world government to help us solve the coronavirus issue. Now, this is a guy who has repeatedly called for a new world order. Check this out.
All these new challenges are bringing together about the biggest restructuring we have ever seen, not just of the global economy, but of the global order as a whole. And 200 years ago, a famous British foreign secretary said that the new world had been called into existence to redress the balance of the old. In 1990, another old world ended, dominated by the Cold War, and people talked then, in 1990, of a new world order. What they actually meant then was a new political order. And what was not foreseen then, but is obvious now from everything that we see and do, what we experience in every day of our life, is the sheer scale and speed and scope of globalization. And it's only now that we can begin to understand that the world order that globalization brings and what it's going to look like, it's driven forward now not just by the balance of military strength, the Cold War times, or ordinary political power. It's being driven forward by a seismic shift in economic power that we see around us. But what does the new world order mean for countries like ours who are looking to succeed? I suggest that the countries that are going to succeed are those that combine flexibility, free trade, open markets, with proper stewardship of the environment and investment in education, infrastructure and innovation. And the question for us is how we meet and master all these challenges to ensure that Britain enhances its competitiveness in the process and realizes what I believe is our destiny of success in this new world order. So, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, a new world is emerging. It is a new world order with significantly different and radically new challenges for the future.
New world order, right? They all agree we need a new world order, right? And so now they're trying to turn the World Health Organization into a kind of global ministry of health, right? And, of course, the global health ministry has been under the control of communists and communist sympathizers for a long time. Before the current chief, an Ethiopian communist, who actually secured his election with help from the communist Chinese, it was run by an actual agent of communist China, Margaret Chan. So these people definitely want to use this crisis to promote globalism and promote tyranny. And funny how communist Chinese agents and their allies in the United States, like the Rockefellers, seem to be all over this. And don't forget, right, George Soros is the guy who told us that China should own the New World Order like the U.S. owned the old one. He said China has a better functioning government than the United States. Are you starting to get the picture? Are you starting to understand where they're going with this? Right? Global tyranny along the lines of what communist China does to its victims is what they are planning, is what they are advancing, and they're very serious about it. They're also pushing now the advancement of this global currency, the International Monetary Fund, currently led by a Bulgarian, Miss Georgieva. She is now promoting the IMF printing up these special drawing rights. She talks about boosting global liquidity by creating a bunch of, you know, fake global currency called special drawing rights. And really, they're grooming the International Monetary Fund to become the global Federal Reserve with the power to issue global liquidity, which just means print money, kind of like the Federal Reserve issues dollar liquidity. They want the IMF to issue global liquidity. And they're threatening that they're going to spend, you know, $50 billion equivalent U.S. dollars on this. They say they have $1 trillion worth of lending capacity. And we're seeing similar things at the national level with the Federal Reserve, right? They've said they're going to print unlimited money. They're expecting to print $4 trillion in cash, right? Not necessarily print, but create out of nothing, charge us interest on it, and then loan it to companies, use it to buy municipal bonds. I mean, they're basically going to end up owning the entire economy. Combine that with the $2 trillion stimulus package that Congress just passed, and we're talking now almost $75,000 per household in the United States, per family of four people, okay? These are gargantuan numbers. What would you do with $75,000 other than send money to cronies with lobbyists on Capitol Hill and the friends of the mega bankers who run the Federal Reserve? We need to understand here that we are being played, right? We are being fleeced. We are being looted. We are having our liberties stolen from us. And this may not be the big one, right? Things may be getting back to normal soon. It seems like the globalists are already starting to admit that, oh, well, actually, yeah, the coronavirus wasn't that bad. Sorry, we shut down your economy and stole all your money and cost you your job. Yeah, that was our bad. But they are moving us further along every time they do something like this on the goal toward global totalitarianism. This is the deep state's agenda. We must oppose it. We must expose it. And if you don't do it, dear viewer and listener, nobody else is going to come to the rescue, right? It's all on you. You are the one who's got to get involved. So make sure you like this video, share, subscribe, right? Send it on by email to your friends, to your family, to your pastor, to your congressman, to whoever needs to see it. Check out all this stuff. We've got a special report coming out in the New American very, very soon on coronavirus. You'll want to get copies of that. It'll be a print magazine that you can distribute to people. And we need to get the word out. We need to expose this. Freedom is the cure, right? Turning back to God, that is going to be the cure, not sacrificing our liberties and moving toward a totalitarian global regime. That's the worst possible idea for any circumstance, much less for fighting a virus. I'm Alex Newman. This is Behind the Deep State. Thank you again, and God bless.
There was an article in the Daily Caller News Foundation's website today reporting on conservative criticism of the director of the World Health Organization, as Alex Newman had pointed out here, an Ethiopian gentleman who got his position with the backing of China, Communist China. And the criticism is that he's been running what they call interference for Communist China and their handling in their handling of the coronavirus. And you see a lot of glowing praise for the Communist Chinese in this matter on the website. At least I have seen some of which I would call that. And they're calling for him to resign and for the U.S. to reconsider its funding, which amounts to about 15%, I believe, of the budget for the World Health Organization. Be that as it may, I mean, a lot of this is being carried over into the mainstream media, which, of course, are also partners with these globalists. They're part of the same group, and they just despise Trump because he's trying to turn things around and promote individual freedoms and reestablish the American middle class, and therefore strengthen the country as it was and not go into these radical changes and imposing world government and loss of freedoms on us that is supposed to be this utopia someday, at least for the people that think they're going to have it, that want to impose it. I mentioned the Democrats' latest committee to investigate Trump. Of course, that was just one of many efforts to exploit the coronavirus pandemic to promote their causes. You probably heard about all the pork spending, and it wasn't just leftist pork being promoted, but a lot of it was, and promotion of leftist voting schemes in the stimulus bill that was passed that Trump recently signed. It was last weekend. Before there was some backing down on this in order to pass the bill. Now I understand they're trying to the Democrats under Pelosi and the House are trying to get a lot of that back into the what they call a fourth stimulus package, which they want to come up with more printed money and to supposedly help out the country, but also help out themselves and their causes. Let's listen to a segment from the Mark Levin radio show on March 23, when the stimulus bill was still being debated. Hear his take on some of what they wanted to put in there. Please play soundbite two.
You know, when the Democrats, Sanders called himself a democratic socialist, they're not democratic socialists. What we're learning now is they're fascistic socialists. They're iron-fisted Venezuelan socialists. They want to tank this economy if they don't get their way. Tank this economy. You know what they want? Same-day voter registration, because they're corrupt and there's no way to vet people when they're registering the same day. They want to eliminate the entire post office debt, tens of billions of dollars in this bill. Solar and wind energy subsidies. Then they go on, we got to make sure the money goes to the people, not to the corporations. Ladies and gentlemen, the vast majority of us work for a corporation or a small business. Why do they keep trashing American business? It's American corporations that are coming up with therapies for this virus. It's American corporations. They're going to come up with a vaccine. It's American corporations. They're running the assembly lines and changing them to make ventilators rather than automobiles, to make masks and gowns rather than 3M tape. It's the private sector that is in the heart and soul of this country, not politicians and not bureaucrats, not fascistic socialism, not redistribution of wealth. And now what do they want to do? They want to destroy our governmental system and our economic system. They see an opportunity. Pelosi and the Democrats, the clown governor of New York. Oh, he's so wonderful. He's a clown, barely literate, like his dumb brother. They keep pushing this Defense Production Act. The president already triggered it, but the president has been prudential. He's been careful in the exercise of his power. Unlike some of these blue state governments, they can't wait to shut down their states.
As I said, the new House of Representatives Coronavirus Committee investigating Trump is just a part of the left's hope and efforts to smear Trump in order to destroy him politically. Expect to see a lot more of this leading up to and following the Democratic Presidential Nominating Convention later this year. Here's a conversation on the Sean Hannity radio show, April 1, between Hannity and commentator Bill O'Reilly about the latest Destroy Trump scheme. Note that is this latest Destroy Trump scheme. Note that it starts with O'Reilly, host of the former The O'Reilly Factor program on Fox Network, stating he feels more simple than usual lately, as he humorously touts himself as a simple man. Please play soundbite 3.
But I am feeling more simple than usual today because I have noticed something that I hadn't heard on any of the media, and it's fascinating. So the nexus between politics and the pandemic has now been established this week. If you read the Boston Globe editorial from March 30th, it says that President Trump has blood on his hands over the coronavirus, all right? They wrote those words. And then if you look at the New York Times article from today, White House economists warned in 2019 a pandemic could devastate America, New York Times. So this is not by accident that these two newspapers, ultra-left, both of them, have come out this week in conjunction with CNN and NBC News. Now, the theme is that the President of the United States knew early that there was going to be a pandemic and did nothing, hid it from the people. This is what you're going to hear from now until the conventions in the summer, that you can't reelect a president who covered up a pandemic, even though he knew it was going to kill Americans. It comes out of a place called the Bonner Group, and then it goes up to Boston. There's another Democratic think tank up there, Dewey Square, and they disseminate this stuff. So this is the new theme. So let me take this apart. So the Boston Globe says President Trump has blood on his hands because he didn't alert the country and the world to it. So I say to the Boston Globe, in 3.5 years, you have not said one good word on your editorial board about Donald Trump. We did a Google search on BillO'Reilly.com. Not one good word. Not anything about the economy, not anything about trade deals, not one word positive for the Boston Globe. And they endorse Elizabeth Warren for president. Now, I want to know, because I'm a simple man, what other world leader tagged the pandemic? Give me one name. Did Boris Johnson do it in Britain? Did Angela Merkel do it in Germany? Did the Australian Prime Minister do it? Did anybody do it?
You okay, are looking at facts.
Truth.
It's very
it's
simple truth that is knowledgeable.
It's not complicated truth.
So I can add. Let me add to this with one statement. Now, right. I think you're like me. I'm guessing. I have such a profound, deep respect for everybody in the medical community. Dr. Anthony Fauci has served now six presidents. Six. He was in the forefront of saving lives with AIDS and other pandemics. He's been there. The guy is amazing. The 26th of January, first known case, timeline matters, of coronas in the United States. The 26th, this is Anthony Fauci.
What can you tell the American people about what's going on? Should they be scared?
I don't think so. The American people should not be worried or frightened by this. It's a very, very low risk to the United States. It isn't something that the American public needs to worry about or be frightened about, because we have ways of preparing, of screening, of people coming in, and we have ways of responding, like we did with this one case in Seattle, Washington, who had traveled to China and brought back the infection.
Now, simple man Bill O'Reilly, please know, that is not to say gotcha to Anthony Fauci. He didn't know.
No.
Nobody knew.
What a difference a few weeks made in Fauci's perspective on the coronavirus outbreak. Now, Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, of course, was not the only one. Here's a clip from CBS News February 24 in which House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is touring San Francisco's Chinatown and urging people to go there because everything ostensibly is safe. The clip starts out with the observation that business people in Chinatown were worried about how the coronavirus spread had been affecting their businesses. Play sound by four, please.
A slump in business due to fear surrounding the coronavirus. KPIX5's Ann Makovic is live as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi addresses the issue there. Ann?
Yeah, come with me as we stalk House Speaker Pelosi right now. She's been taking a tour down Chinatown, and we have stopped already at a temple. We've stopped at a fortune cookie factory, the Wok Shop, which sells cookware, and now she is stopping at one of the little gift shops in Chinatown. If you can see her live now, she has been talking to people along the way, a lot of business owners, a lot of community leaders here in Chinatown who have been concerned about the optics of the coronavirus. And the fear that some people might have of coming to a place like Chinatown that might have a lot of Chinese nationals. So she has been going around to show that it is perfectly safe to be here. She says that this is a very special place to her heart because she started a lot of her early campaigning when she started her political career, some of it right here in Chinatown. And we got some word from her earlier on sort of the message that she's trying to purvey here.
It's exciting to be here, especially at this time, to be able to be unified with our community. We want to be vigilant about what it might be on the, what is out there in other places. We want to be careful about how we deal with it. But we do want to say to people, come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
Now, the fabulously wealthy Pelosi and her fellow leftists in Congress want to again investigate Trump in hopes of destroying him politically, this time over his response to the coronavirus outbreak. Of course, Democrats in Congress aren't the only ones seizing on the pandemic in an attempt to destroy Trump. Here's a March 25 social media posting by Hollywood actor and star Michael Rappaport, raging at Trump. Supposedly over Trump following the nation's medical authorities' recommendations for people to stay at home. I want to warn you that Rappaport's tirade is profanity-laced. Play soundbite five, please.
Fucking pig, the real people want to get back to work ASAP. You never worked a fucking day in your life. You're worried about the next 4 years. You need to be worried about the next 4 days, motherfucker. You need to be worried about the next 4 weeks, the next 4 months, you motherfucker. You are the worst possible motherfucker we could have in power making decisions right now. The real people want to get back to work. Why don't you send your fucking son, Dick Stain Donald Trump Jr., Big Tooth fucking Eric Trump, Little fucking Baron, fucking Ivanka, Junkyard Jared, let them go out there and test the fucking waters. Let them see if shit is sweet. Let them take the cars, the trains, the buses, the Amtraks. Let them play in the park and everything's good. If everything's good after 5 days of them playing out there in the streets, we'll all go back there. You want to make the American people guinea pigs so you could get reelected? You fucking clown. And people, if you fall for this shit, shame on you. If you still fall for this shit, shame on you. This guy doesn't give a fuck about anybody but himself. He's talking about the next 4 years. Motherfucker, we're trying to figure out what to do with the next 4 hours, you fucking pimp. You con man. You two-bit good-for-nothing pimp.
I think you can make the case that this guy is typical of the kind of people who make it big in Hollywood. at least to a certain extent. And his attitude toward Trump is probably shared by quite a few other Hollywood people, some of whom come to mind right away are one of whom, of course, would be Bob De Niro. You heard his rants against Trump, stating he wanted to punch Trump in the face. And then, of course, he gets called to the White House and is given the Medal of Freedom. Think about that when you consider subscribing to a movie streaming service or renting a movie to watch at home. Now here's some audio from the Rush Limbaugh show, April 3, in which Limbaugh is also expressing concern about the left's exploitation of the pandemic. Earlier in his broadcast, Limbaugh was commenting that the nation's medical authorities were caught unaware of the magnitude of the coronavirus threat. And he had stated that, well, they explained that China wasn't truthful with them about the magnitude of it and misled them. Well, he's critical of them, and I can understand that, but at the same time, a lot of people were misled and misunderstood. But they weren't the only ones, as you know. Please play soundbite 6.
Victor Davis Hanson was on the Ingram Angle last night with Laura Ingram. He's a senior fellow, brilliant man, at Hoover Institution, campus Stanford, Palo Alto. He's a farmer in the California Central Valley. The question she asked him, said, the left never lets a good crisis go to waste, Victor. Now, you and I have talked about this before, but will people see through some of these schemes? Will they ultimately recoil and resist them?
People are advocating to manipulate the crisis and, more importantly, to enact an agenda that didn't have 50% support. We saw that in the Democratic primaries. Nobody wanted the Green New Deal or Medicare for All or open borders. This desire to manipulate this crisis for an agenda that does not have popular support and would transform or reject the status quo before the virus, which was the best economy we've had in decades, it doesn't make any sense.
Right. And his point here is that the left must always force what it wants on us because it's never popularly supported. The left did not win. The White House running on this agenda, Crazy Bernie running on this agenda, did not win the Democrat nomination. And so they're going to force it. They're going to take the occasion of the crisis of the coronavirus to force this communist progressive agenda on everybody through the spending bills and through the other efforts to re-stimulate the economy. The next question he got from Laura Ingram, well, you got to imagine the policymakers at some point will hear from the people who are suffering with these job losses in these businesses and say, hey, you know, we've got lives as well. We have to somehow to preserve them. We need to get back to work.
I'm sitting in a state that's the fifth largest economy in the world that's completely shut down. And we've suffered less than 250 deaths, and we have about 3 million people, 3 people per million that have died. We have twice the population of New York, and we've suffered one-tenth the deaths. We have 3 people per million dying. That's just a fact of life when we have 760 people in California dying every day. And during this crisis, we've had about 4 extra on average.
I want to go through this again because this is the point. I have been trying to focus on California all week. Aside from the stark, shocking impact of these numbers is what they mean. Now, let's go through this. California, the fifth largest economy in the world, it is completely shut down. 40 million people live in the state of California, and they have suffered less than 250 deaths from corona.
Well, that was Friday, a few days ago. According to the California Department of Public Health, their website, as a few hours ago, showed that as of yesterday, the 4th of April, it may have been updated by now, but this is what I saw when I looked at it, there were 12,026 confirmed cases of coronavirus in the state. That's with 40 million, some 40 million residents, and 276 deaths. It is very interesting, this contrast, because California is the largest state of all, and many people are very afraid of this. You turn on the media, the mainstream media. I mean, I looked at NBC News a day or so ago when they were carrying on, and oh my God, there was how terrible everything's happened. The worst, the nation has had experienced 1,000 coronavirus deaths in just the last 24 hours, and things were just bad all over, and there were still 5 or 6 states holding out from a ordering their populations to shelter in place and on and on. And of course, the idea is, well, why isn't there a nationwide lockdown? Trump should order it, you know. Well, I looked at the CDC website, and it appeared that one of the states, of course, that hasn't done this yet is Wyoming, not exactly the most populous state in the country. If I read it correctly, it indicated that they have 50 or less coronavirus cases. And are you going to shut down the whole state just because of that? I mean, you know, these are things that should be considered, of course, if you're not one of the globalist socialist types. But so many in the media are, and they just cannot stand the fact that Trump wants to return us to the good old days of individual freedoms and non-governmental, governmental powers. And the rates of infection numbers in California are similar to rates per population numbers in most other states. As you know, New York State and neighboring New Jersey and Connecticut have much more serious and larger COVID-19 numbers. In fact, they are being called the epicenter of this epidemic in the country. What's the difference, though? Why is New York so bad off when California should theoretically be the epicenter? And it's a very intriguing question. I'm going to go into that in a minute, but there's currently a lot of debate going on among observers and medical experts as to why the outbreak is so much worse in New York and it's close by neighbors. Well, I lived in New York City, in and around New York City, the greater New York metro area, for nearly a decade. And I can tell you that millions of people before this pandemic happened and the lockdown occurred, millions of people commuted every day in and out of the city in heavy vehicular traffic and on packed trains and buses. The streets of Manhattan were human rivers flowing around and among the many high-rise buildings and skyscrapers there. It's crowded everywhere, or it was. And it's no surprise to me that these places are hotbeds of contagion. Exactly how authorities will deal with this infection problem as it relates to the coronavirus in the long term remains to be seen. But sooner or later, there's going to have to be a return to some kind of normalcy there, just as in the rest of the nation, if we are to survive this mega disruption of our lives. Again, even with all this traffic from China and so forth into California, California's numbers are looking pretty good, I'd say. Of course, these things are going to change. But there's some good news on the horizon. I'm hoping that we're going to see in the long run that it wasn't so bad here in California, where I live, and many other states as was predicted. Although we're going to see more people die from this, there's no doubt about it. Again, I'm not trying to make light of the pandemic and its threat to people's lives. We are, however, going to have to find ways to live with this threat and overcome it. And there is promising news out there, if you look for it. I read just days ago that Italy, one of the hardest hit nations in the coronavirus pandemic, has been reporting a slowdown in the numbers of new cases reported. That's a significant number. I saw a couple thousand less per day than in previous days. That same situation has been reported for Washington State, I believe, which is one of the first areas to record coronavirus outbreak and deaths there. By the way, in the last program, I cited Italy and Greece as international hotspots for coronavirus. I meant to say Italy and Spain. Those were two of the hardest hit countries, I understand. You may also have read or heard that there's a growing consensus among doctors around the world that the malaria treatment drug hydroxychloroquine has been used with considerable success in conjunction with the antibiotic, I think, Zithromax, in treating coronavirus patients. And other drugs and new treatment options are being discovered as well to fight this pandemic. There's still a lot of dispute about whether or not it should be used, but I think President Trump is right when he says if you're in a situation where you don't have other options, and we have a legal drug which is considered safe if prescribed within the parameters of the medical consensus on it, then why not try it? We have the gentleman in Florida, I believe, a few days ago, had been I think a week or two ago, he was actually dying. He felt he was dying in a hospital from coronavirus, and the doctors there told him there was nothing more they could do. He was actually to the point of saying goodbye to his family when someone told him, well, have you tried this chloroquine? And he asked the doctor and said, well, yes, we have it. And apparently they prescribed it, and within a day he had a dramatic recovery, and he's touting it as having saved his life. And nothing works for everybody, of course. And people who are very sick with this may or may not respond in every case, but the news is encouraging. And there are other drugs. I forget the name of one. It's a drug used to treat AIDS patients, and that there's some hope for that. There's new things being looked at right and left. A lot of research going on now. There is also a lot of talk in alternative media these days about things you can do to stay healthy and boost your immune system to help you resist coming down with COVID-19 and to recover faster and more completely if you get it. These include nutritional supplements like vitamin D and zinc, taking better care of yourself by getting enough rest and exercise, and ways to avoid stress. If you're interested, do some searches on the internet. You'll find a lot of ideas about things you can do for yourself that can bring you some degree of peace of mind during all this. Now, some doctors will poo-poo this, but I imagine there are a lot of doctors who are also already taking these supplements. Some may be recommending them for their patients, but you know, if you want to put your life in the hands of your doctors, you're perfectly free to do that. I like to look at other things. There are everything you can do to help yourself is a lot. It can't hurt if you're careful with what you do. And these are things to consider rather than just waiting this thing out and hoping that the doctors will save you if you come down with this. My hope is that we'll see a peak of new cases being reported in the coming few weeks, hopefully not more than that, and then quickly see a subsiding of this outbreak, at least for the time being. And we will be able to get back to some degree of normalcy with a return of our thriving economic conditions so that people can get out and get on with their lives and livelihoods. If there's a resurgence later this year and early next, as some are predicting, we will by then know a lot more about how to deal with it more effectively. That's it for another show. We'll be back 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, remember, there are a lot of good things happening, and there's good news to report about this crisis. We will get through it and be able to get on with our lives. Have a good evening.